This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, George Frazier, author of The Last Wild Places of Kansas, will be our special guest. But first, I'm Naturally with your headline news. ScientificAmerican.com reports, the sweeping reefs growing off 200 steamy miles of remote Australian coastline from Cairns to Cape Melville, home to sugar farms and dive resorts, contained some of the least damaged corals growing in one of the world's best marine parks. Until now. In stunning new findings that have laid bare the limitations of marine parks as defenses against rapid environmental change, more than half of the core surveyed in large chunks of this pristine stretch of the Great Barrier Reef are expected to soon be dead. The coral death followed intense coral bleaching, which was caused by global warming and influenced by the whims of the weather. Hot waters have caused corals worldwide to spit out the algae that provide their color and food. Those that can't cool down and find new algae quickly enough die. Overall, 35% of the corals surveyed in the central and northern sections of the Great Barrier Reef were reported this week to be dead or dying. Scientists photographed and dove into 84 reefs and used six categories to score the condition of 200,000 corals. Dead corals could often be spotted by the algae that quickly grew over them. KSHB.com reports, there is a new ordinance in Sugar Creek, Missouri, that restricts the use of agriculture on properties in the city. The new ordinance specifies that vegetation must be 30 feet from the street. Nathan Athens believes it's a witch hunt against him. Athens grows several different types of vegetables on his lawn and loves tending to his garden. Quote, I'd probably say about 300 hours so far this year. I spend all my free time out here. End quote, Athens said. He believes it's important for his family. The family has been given 4 days to get rid of their front yard, garden, or face a fine. They started an online petition in hopes of getting the city to change the ordinance. And you can find more information about this news story on our Eco Radio KC Facebook page. NewsPressNow.com reports, an outbreak of a disease affecting deer populations in Arkansas is prompting Missouri officials to increase testing in some areas of the state. Chronic wasting disease, or CWD, is a neurological disease affecting mainly deer, but also elk, and is 100% fatal once contracted. Because the disease is very contagious, the Missouri Department of Conservation has designated 29 counties as part of a CWD management zone. Currently, counties being continuously monitored are mainly in the eastern portion of the state, but southern Missouri is now being monitored as well. Quote, if you do travel to central Missouri, central north Missouri, to do your deer hunting, be aware that there are some changes in the deer regulations, mandatory check stations in each county, mandatory rules on not feeding during the summer, end quote, said Sean Cleary, wildlife management biologist for the Missouri Department of Conservation. Cleary adds that while these regulations do not include northwest Missouri, officials still would like to keep deer from congregating at feeding sites because the disease can be spread from any contact deer may have with one another. Not only are there regulations on feeding, but also transport of deer around the state. Carcasses cannot be hauled around the state, and there is a mandatory check-in and sampling, Cleary stated. For more about new regulations around the state regarding deer feeding and deer hunting, visit the link on our Eco Radio KC Facebook page. EPA Region 7 has reached a proposed settlement of Clean Water Act violations by Organic Resources Management and its parent company, St. Louis Composting, Inc. As part of the settlement, the companies have agreed to pay a cash penalty of $24,000, perform a supplemental environmental project projected to cost the company $36,000, and retain a consultant to conduct compliance audits at its other facilities. And legislation passed that will allow elimination of the public's voice on the Clean Water Commission. Senate Amendment 1, at the last moment of the legislative session, with no hearings or opportunity for public input, was added to House Bill 1713, authored by Senator Munslinger. Amendment 1 allows the elimination of our voice. And this bill can be vetoed. And as a Missouri resident, you are able to voice your opinion by calling our you can find more information about this also on our Eco Radio KC Facebook page. And at this time, I'd like to turn the mic over to Mr. Murphy.
Thank you very much there, Natural E. We appreciate all your efforts throughout the year, and especially tonight. And yeah, I'm really excited because it doesn't escape me how lucky I am to get to do this program, especially when I read a book that I thoroughly enjoy, and then get to interrogate the author. Mm-hmm. And that's the case tonight. I'm really excited that George Frazier is here. His book is called The Last Wild Places of Kansas: Journeys into Hidden Landscapes. George, welcome to Eco Radio KC.
Thank you, Mike. I want to really thank you for those kind words, for sure.
Oh, I really have thoroughly enjoyed this book. And there's a lot to get to here, but let's start with the title, The Last Wild Places of Kansas. What do you mean by a wild place?
You know, and for the purposes of the book, I didn't want to use the word wilderness, which is what people might assume that, you know, if and we'll talk more about what the book's about, but if you get into it, you think, you know, why not write about the Kansas wilderness? And in environmental literature, that's a really loaded term. So I kind of decided to drop sort of the formal titles and just go with the simple term wild place. And so, you know, a wild place is really a place where nature collides with folklore. It could be an unplowed prairie, a stretch of virgin forest, which we actually do have in the area, an iconic landmark. It probably for sure has higher biodiversity than the rest of the neighborhood. It may have some unusual plants or animals. Some of them may be threatened or endangered. And the thing that I found when I was researching the book is that people notice these places for these characteristics. And so these places accumulate stories, and they do that over decades of time and across generational and cultural boundaries.
One of the things I appreciate with the book is how, you know, I'll say masterfully, you weave personal narrative with environmental issues of the day with history, and it's you're a very good writer. It's very well done, and so there's a lot of interesting history that comes through in this book, and as a result of that, I read the book with a lot of like zeal, but sometimes you got me angry, George. You know what? You know the buffalo is the classic example of what to be mad about in Kansas, and of course not to leave out, you know, Native America.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I was a child of the suburbs, and so I grew up in the suburbs of Kansas City, around the Oak Park Mall. And when I grew up and went to college, I got interested in wild lands. And one of the reasons I remember back to my childhood, you know, we sang Home on the Range, and mm-hmm. and we talked a lot about the buffalo, but, you know, we looked around and there weren't any buffalo.
Right.
And I went to the American West, and there were bison, you know, there are wild buffalo in Yellowstone. And, but I quickly kind of brought the focus that I took in my interest in going out to Western lands. I wanted to bring that back here and try to discover the wild stuff the wild places that still persisted here around in Kansas. And so you do need to deal with a lot of those icons if you're from Kansas, like buffalo. And but it quickly, you know, the stories quickly sort of go out from there.
That's right. That's right. There's some happy stories too. Like, you know, it seems like the otter, for example, is made a comeback. And, you know, what do you think of, like, you know, the prairie dogs and you know, that's an ongoing issue, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the environmental stories in terms of wild, both wild lands and in endangered species is mostly positive in modern Kansas. And especially if you look at, like, if you want to put in there the relative cleanliness of the river. That's people sometimes just focus on the negative, but there's a lot of positive stories in there. You were talking about the wasting disease amongst deer. It's amazing to think that in the 1940s, deer were basically extinct in Kansas. There were no deer. It's not for sure that deer were extirpated, but in western Missouri, maybe all of Missouri, definitely all of Kansas, there were no deer.
Wow.
Go to Shawnee Mission Park.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
In Shawnee Mission Park a few years ago, somebody did a study that said there was the highest density of white-tailed deer of anywhere in the country in Shawnee Mission Park. There are good and bad things about that, right?
Absolutely.
It's great that there are a lot of deer, but it's also, you know, maybe there should be some mountain lions coming after those deer. And it turns out we do have mountain lions in Kansas and Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the biggest mountain lion skeptic, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But I was wrong, you know. There have, people, there's a guy that shot a mountain lion in south central Kansas. We have roadkill mountain lions in the Casey metro area.
Wow.
Those are sad stories, though.
Those are sad stories.
Yeah.
But I'm glad there are mountain lions. Yeah. That's cool.
Well, I want to delve into, like, you know, individual stories in the book, because you break this up into chapters in different places you've visited. And our listeners will be surprised to hear that there's quite a few within our listening area. So I want to especially make sure we touch on those. But we are in our fun drive, and so I want to take a couple moments to urge our listeners to consider supporting KKFI and supporting Eco Radio KC, a program that has been around for many years now, and I know I hear from people all the time how much they appreciate the show. We cover a lot of issues that, you know, I always say KKFI is at its best when it connects the local with the global or at least the national. And so last week we played some recorded material from an Earth Day event about environmental justice, and we also that earlier that day on Memorial Day, I was out on a march with people as they walked from the old Kansas City weapons plant on Bannister to the new weapons plant, and we recorded someone in an act of civil disobedience. I think it's number 155 crossed the line at the new weapons plant, and as they talked about the, you know, the government is admitting to 900 toxins, distinct toxins, being left behind on the old site on Bannister that's been there since World War II. And we were right there that morning recording it and putting it right on the air that night. And we've the week before that, we did the BP oil spill. We'll look back on that for several years. And we also looked at the Healthy Rivers Partnership. We had some folks in talking about all the river advocacy groups working together. And I forget the term she used, but something like it was a combination of collaboration and competition, because people have to work together, but yet they're vying against each other for funding. And so it was an interesting way of putting it. We had Stan Slaughter, the eco troubadour, on before that, and he talked about his invitation. He got a personal invitation from Prince Charles to go over to his garden in England as part of this big conference, and Stan was there as the compost guru, and he gave extensive workshops before. Pretty much, he was the only one that wasn't British, I think, that was doing a workshop. And he said there were 20 something panelists that had their own shows of some sort on BBC. Anyhow, my point on looking back on this is to remind you of some of the programs we do at Eco Radio KC, and I'll go back over more. And if you think this is an important service and it means something to you, we might ask you to pick up that phone and dial 888-931-0901. And Joe and Diane are anxious to take your call. That's 888-931-0901. We'll play a spot in a little bit with about the station's thank you gifts. But a couple to mention for this hour, we have At the $35 level, there's the Solar CD. That's S-O-U-L-A-R. That's Craig Wolf and his band. Craig is with the Sierra Club in Kansas. And he's got something to say with his music. And that number is, we already got one taker on the book for so, and I didn't even get to mention it yet, but one book is gone. But so Craig Wolf, the Solar CD that is at the $35 level environmental music, and it's really well produced and well done. That's $35. We have one Missouri River Relief ball cap at the $50 level that can be yours. And George Frazier, our guest tonight, has been kind enough to offer a couple books, to, a couple copies of his book, The Last Wild Places of Kansas, Journey into Hidden Landscapes. And one of our phone volunteers, Mark Andrus, decided I got to have that. And so Mark coughed up the money. And so we've just got one of the books left. And that's at the $100 level. And George, you'll autograph it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
And so those are just a few things to think about. The number, again, is 888-931-0901. You can go online as well at kkfi.org. But Skylar, who's our intern here, is going to give that phone number one more time. What is it?
888-931-0901.
That's right. 888-931-0901.
Hey, Michael. My nephew from Germany, who listens on the web, wants to know what thank you gifts are available during the current pledge drive.
Dankeschön to him. At the $75 level, there's the KKFI collaboration CD. Then at the $90 level, it's the KKFI t-shirt. Or at the $150 level is the guest DJ slot, for which you can gift to someone or keep it for yourself. Call 888-931-0901 and let them know which one you are interested in. Or you can donate online at kkfi.org.
That's 888-931-0901.
Please call now, 888-931-0901.
All right, back here in the studio with Eco Radio KC. My name is Mike Murphy, and Skylar's in here, and Natural E is in here, and we've got our special guest, George Frazier. We're talking about his book, The Last Wild Places of Kansas, Journey into Hidden Landscapes. So how did this all come together?
You know, I mentioned before I grew up in the Kansas City area, and when I went to college, I got really interested in the American West, and so I started taking vacations, you know, to do things like walking in the mountains and, you know, doing long bike rides in the West and spending time in places like Colorado and Montana. But I could never completely get over that when I was growing up, I was always interested in we lived kind of at the edge of suburbia, and I was always interested in those margins at the edge, and so I was interested in taking this sort of Western wildlands perspective and applying it to home, because Kansas is famously a part of the old American West, and you know that there's no bigger ecosystem than the Tallgrass Prairie, and so looking around at the literature though of books written about Kansas, it seemed like there were the books written about the wildlands of Kansas were either like pictorial books, or they were books about people that lived a long time ago. And, you know, they kind of were looking back to what it used to be like. And those are really inspiring and cool and wistful and sad. And, you know, but I lived in the modern times, right? And I wanted to go, you know, to see, can you go out into Kansas today and you know, see not necessarily what's left, but you know, see what the kind of the wild inventory of the state is today. And so I put together, for lack of a better term, like an heirloom collection of these wild places. And going back to books that exist, though, the thing I noticed about existing books is they all seem to skirt around what to me was the most obvious issue for somebody trying to do this, which is that almost the entire state of Kansas, and western Missouri for that matter too, is privately owned. And so the first thing I kind of ran into was, you know, the fact that if I wanted to go out and see what's out there in the hinterlands, I was going to have to deal with the fact that, you know, I was going to run into private property. And so this wasn't like, you know, writing a book about walking across the Nevada desert where, you know, 98% of Nevada is publicly owned. So I definitely wanted to integrate the frustrating parts of the Wild Lands experience into Kansas into what I was doing. So, you know, I wasn't really just writing a Pollyanna like a book about places where lots of people have already been. So another thing you won't find in the book is some of the more popular sites. Like, I don't talk a lot about Tallgrass Prairie National Preserve, which is a fantastic place. It's essentially our national park, but it's been written about in a lot of other books. Instead, I write a lot about places people may not know about, even here in the Kansas City area, that are fantastic places.
So let's talk about some of the places that you can listen to KKFI while you're there. That might disturb the serenity of it, but for example, so something that's in our listening area. We'll give one example.
So my book is roughly organized from the least wild to the most wild place, and we can start right here in the most accessible Kansas City location that I think is in every way an iconic, sort of mystifying place. And that's the White Feather Spring in the Argentine District in Kansas City, Kansas. And it's on private property. But there's sort of an open door policy if you want to go see it. And so the White Feather Spring is a spring that's existed for hundreds of years. I mean, it's essentially been around since any person has been writing about the Kansas City area, and well before that. And it's been a constant source of water for the community. And when in the Depression, when, you know, the river ran dry and ran backwards, people in the, you know, in Kansas City, Kansas could go to the spring and it didn't even change. It was still basically running at the same output.
Wow.
And so from just an old resource story, you know, that's pretty cool. And I've always thought springs, for lack of trying to describe why, are just cool in and of themselves. Because, you know, lots of springs you can go, you know, I'm not suggesting anybody try to drink from a spring in Kansas City, but, you know, if you had to drink, you know, water, you would want to get it from a spring. But the thing that's so interesting about this spring is that it's associated with Tenskwatawa, the Shawnee prophet, who is he's sort of in some ways disappeared from Kansas City history. And not completely, because I think some people know the stories of Tenskwatawa. He was the brother of Tecumseh, the famous leader of the Shawnee during the Northwest Indian Wars. And he and his brother sort of developed a pan-Indian confederacy based on some experiences Tenskwatawa had that were, like, you know, for lack of a better term, visions and prophecies. And near the end of his life, he came with the rest of the Shawnee tribe to this Kansas City, Kansas area, and he set up the last prophet's town on the banks of the spring. And when he died, his body is buried somewhere on that site. Nobody really knows where. Some people think it's underneath a big pile of rocks on the property. And today, the site is owned by several of the Shawnee tribes have sort of pitched in to preserve this very small, extremely historic Native American resting place for Tenskwatawa.
A fascinating story. I could spend probably a whole show on Tenskwatawa. But again, like I said, you do a great job of weaving in some great history into this. And so where does that water come from?
It comes from it's a pressure spring, so it's not from way deep in the ground. It's sort of my understanding. I'm not a geologist. Yeah. It's sort of draining the upland hills of the Argentine.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And what else is in our listening area?
So another site I discovered in the just immediate listening area here is Black Bob Cave.
Yeah.
Black Bob Cave is definitely on private land. And the fascinating story behind this is both of these sites, and, you know, kind of in a stone's throw from where I grew up, are associated with these traditionalist Shawnee people from the time when the Shawnee tribe basically lived where Kansas City is today. And I'll tell you, when I tried to find out about Black Bob Cave and the story of Black Bob's sort of fiercely traditional Shawnee people, there is almost nothing has been written except for in arcane history journals about this man. But Black Bob Road is now, you know, one of the heavy sort of arterial, you know, traffic ways in Overland Park. And Black Bob's name is everywhere in southern Johnson County. And my research kind of showed that they think Black Bob Cave was sort of the center of where this group of about 900 splinter tribal members of the Shawnee tribe lived.
This was a more radical band.
They were traditionalists. Right. They tried to lay low, and they tried to kind of not kind of get into the squabbles between the main part of the Shawnee tribe and the government, because they were trying to kind of preserve the way. From my studies, it seemed like they were trying to preserve their way of life. And the Black Bobs eventually left for Oklahoma because they were raided by Quantrill. So the one thing they did take a public stand on is that they came down on the side of the anti-slavery movement. And even though the Native Americans couldn't enjoy the, you know, kind of the benefits of citizenship or anything that the sort of the abolitionist movement was trying to achieve for slaves at the time, they wouldn't enjoy those benefits until the 20th century. They made a very public stand that they were with the abolitionists. And so Quantrill kind of put them on his list.
Mm-hmm.
And so Quantrill raided the tribe somewhere near Black Bob Cave, which is roughly in the area of the Overland Park Arboretum. I don't want to give specific instructions to get there. And all that's left of the story of this tribe is this natural cave in this beautiful wooded glen near the headwaters of the Blue River, which is one of the major tributaries of Kansas City. So right where that river kind of sort of takes root, you've got this cave and this story and this, you know, piece of history tied to a wild place.
One thing that he made a point of saying in the book was that you were impressed with the people that own the land, that they did seem to sense their responsibility as stewards there and try to be doing the right thing.
Yeah, especially the people. I mean, I found this at every turn, and every place I went to was like this, and especially in southern Johnson County at the site of Black Bob Cave, the landowners are definitely stewards of that site. Many people have come and visited them to Boy Scout troops, and people go see the cave. The Kansas Geologic Survey has done a lot of study because this is a place where groundwater comes to the surface. And so Kansas Geologic Survey is in their springs inventory. You know, they went and studied the site. And they've been extremely generous with their use of the site and also with their preservation of it. Another interesting story about Black Bob Cave is it was this forest that it sits in was completely destroyed by the Ruskin Heights tornado.
Really?
And so all the old trees there were yanked out. And the cave, you know, it got raided by Quantrill, it got hit by an F5 tornado, and it's still there.
Wow.
What is Quantrill?
Oh, yeah, for listeners that don't know, the Quantrill, we got Pendergast in Kansas City, we got Quantrill on the Kansas side. He's kind of our, in Lawrence, he was a... one of the border ruffians.
Right.
And after the Civil War started, he sort of led a guerrilla campaign that wasn't part of the regular war. It was just sort of a sadistic series of massacres to kind of get even with the Kansas people. And so he went to Lawrence and just destroyed the town, killed over 160 people that lived there, and sort of set the tone for Lawrence.
Right.
So Lawrence is the symbol is the phoenix rising from the ashes. So Lawrence was burned in its early days, and Quantrill was the guy that did it.
Yeah, pretty rough guy. You got to watch out for those Missouri folks.
I'm not saying Pendergast was a Quantrill because he wasn't.
Right. We some notoriety in history there. Yeah. But he was from Missouri, right? And he'd go.
That's right.
Over into.
My understanding is he lived, is it called Snybar Creek? He kind of hung out in that area.
Right.
And we could talk for a long time about Quantrill for sure. Yeah.
Right. Big raid, was it 18...
I think it's August 21st, 1863.
I think you're correct.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, all right, some other things in our listening area. What about...
Maybe the most compelling site in some ways for me was another place just in our backyards that I never knew about growing up, and that's the Fort Leavenworth Woods. And so, military bases in some ways are time capsules, because Fort Leavenworth was established really early on in terms of the history of settlement in Kansas, well before statehood, you know, 30, 40 years. And there's a loop in the Missouri River that has been left untouched since that time and much earlier. And so a beautiful bottomland forest exists from the old days there. Wasn't studied very much, wasn't talked about. In the early 2000s, some biologists from the Kansas Biological Survey went in there because they were doing like an inventory of existing mammals. They were doing one of these things that scientists do where they looked at this old study and they said, okay, we're going to go back there now and see what's still there. And they discovered these gigantic trees that nobody had really written about. And so they kind of did some tree ring analysis and started looking at these trees, and they realized it was an ancient pecan grove that was at least 300 years old.
Does that mean there are trees there that are 300 years old?
That's right, an entire grove. Wow. And there's a kind of grovey aspect to it, which makes people think that they may have been planted by the Kanza tribe that were there at the time.
Uh-huh.
Not for sure, but it's definitely the highest quality forest remaining in the whole lower Missouri River and the northernmost wild pecan grove in the country. And nobody, including biologists, were paying much attention to this. And so, but in my research, I found that a lot of people used to pay attention to it. So, like the famous naturalist Audubon, he made a specific trip to that forest to look for the Carolina parakeet, which was a native parrot that, if you can believe it, lived in Kansas, you know, before they were gunned to oblivion.
And
Lewis and Clark stayed there. It was a prison for Chief Joseph and the Nez Perce when they, you know, he kind of gave up fighting in the West. They held him prisoner in that forest.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of old time history, but to me, it's completely eclipsed by what's there today. And so there are no proper hiking trails at this site, and it's on public land because it's a military base.
Mm.
And you need to get permission to go on the base. And so if you want to go into the Fort Leavenworth Woods, you go to the base, you tell them kind of what you want to do, and they may search your car. And at least the last time I went, and they'll let you go back. You need to be aware of hunting seasons because you don't want to go back there at the peak of rifle deer season because a lot of people hunt in the woods. But that leaves, you know, many months of the season when you could go back and go look at these pecans. And it, in every way, is just a mesmerizing experience to go into this forest. It really feels like you're going, you know, it takes a good hour to walk back to the grove, to the pecans.
Really?
And to me, something I thought about when I was there is that, you know, these guys were here before statehood, and
right.
they walked in on foot on these trails, and it's still trails, you know? They
wow.
haven't paved over the Leavenworth Woods. So it's sort of the first people to walk into the Leavenworth Woods since the Kanza, because they had, by the time, you know, the Audubon and those guys were there, the Kanza tribe had moved west
yeah.
to the Manhattan area. You know, they were trails then, they're trails today. And so it just reminds us, I think it reminds me that, the American wilderness legacy kind of flavors all of our modern issues in some ways, and it's you can get a sense for what that is even in these small places in Kansas. And I went to many, many places in the state where I had that sort of you know, eerie feeling that past and present were sort of together.
You did a good job of conveying that feeling, because I kind of felt it vicariously as I was reading.
Very cool.
Yeah, really good. We're talking to George Frazier. He's the author of The Last Wild Places of Kansas, Journeys into Hidden Landscapes. And I do want to remind our listeners that we are in our fund drive. So we're going to ask you to consider making your support known for KKFI, for Eco Radio KC, like Mark Andrus did. And Mark got one of the books. There's one book left of George's, and that will be autographed, and that's at the $100 level. And also, we've got. We want to thank Edward in Kansas City, Missouri, for his kind contribution. And it looks like we've got someone else to thank. Who do we have? Do you want to read it?
Yeah, sure. Sharon Lockhart of Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, okay, great.
Thank you, Sharon.
Yeah, thanks, Sharon. That's great. That's great, Sharon. We appreciate your support. But so I was starting to go over some earlier shows, programs that we've put on to remind people of the service we provide. So we've been looking at this issue with John Garland Park in Kansas City, Kansas, which is a park built over a landfill that Richard Mabian was looking at. We've also covered Seed Savers events. A couple of people that actually wrote blurbs on the back of the book, Laura Caldwell and Don Bueller, were on back in April discussing testing of the water and then exposing youngsters to the water and getting excitement developed early. So that's just a few things of that we've been having on here. And we had Amy Goodman call in. Amy's got a new book out, and we asked her to focus on a lot of the environmental things going on. And so a lot of what I think are interesting programs, and you can always check those out because they are podcast on kkfi.org. So a few things for you to think about. Again, the special thank you gifts during this hour, the solar CD, it's at the $35 level. We've just got three of those available. Wonderful CD, great sound and great spirit, and all about being in harmony with the earth. We have one Missouri River Relief ball cap, and we have one book remaining, autographed copy or soon to be autographed copy of The Last Wild Places of Kansas by our guest George Frazier. But we need the phones to ring. We need you to be like Sharon and Mark and Edward. Pick up that phone. Make that contribution right now. 888-931-0901. 888-931-0901. There are also the KKFI station thank you gifts. There's the $75 level. There's the KKFI collaboration CD at the $90 level, the T-shirt, and at the $150 level, there's the guest DJ. You could be a guest DJ for 1 hour on any of our music programs, or give that certificate to someone else who might appreciate it, because Father's Day is coming up, for example. So those are just a few things, but the important thing you get from it is continued programming that continues to strive to grow and get better. And once again, Skylar, what's that phone number?
It would be 888-931-0901.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, 888-931-0901. You can also go online as well at kkfi.org. So other things in our listening area, George?
Well, you had mentioned Don Bueller and Laura Caldwell.
Right.
And maybe the most sort of well-known wild place in Kansas is the Kansas River itself. And, you know, rivers are interesting things, I discovered. And other than people plowing up prairies intentionally to destroy them, I have found no other thing that people feel so strongly about in Kansas than rivers. Mm. And so, you know, it kind of makes sense. We're a state that's on the way to the West. We're in the transition. We're a Midwestern state, but we're a Western state. And if you know anything about the West, people get excited about water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, it's fighting words, sort of.
Right, right.
And so we have kind of our own version of it here. And certainly in the West, you know, where you get into the rain shadow of the Rockies, there's not enough water. And so you've got the whole Ogallala aquifer issue. And,
right.
And even today, you know, we're talking about maybe making a kind of an aqueduct to siphon off river water from the Missouri River in the northeast corner of the state and hauling it all the way west to western Kansas. Boy. But here in the eastern part of the state, you know, river access is an interesting topic. So about 15 years ago, there was a Supreme Court case that established kind of what the law was. And before that, everybody kind of figured that, you know, you can go canoeing.
Yeah.
And mostly, you know, mostly people kind of canoed where they wanted to. And this court case looked into the letter of the law about this, because in the Kansas Constitution, it establishes that the Kansas, the Missouri, and the Arkansas rivers are – navigable streams. And is going to bore listeners. Perhaps we got into the details of that, but it's very, very interesting. And but it was an open question about our other rivers. We've got a lot of rivers in eastern Kansas, a lot of great rivers to float. And in southeast Kansas, we've got the Kansas Ozarks. Uh-huh. And it's sort of the only part of the state where you've got like an active sort of party stream situation going on. And that's why the court case came from there. And to the surprise of T.J. Hiddle, who founded the Kansas Canoe Association, Chris Meek, who tried the case, some of the old people that started the, you know, that predated Friends of the Kaw and a lot of the groups that are around today, the court came down and said that those three streams are it. Every other stream, you can canoe it, but there's an asterisk by it. The asterisk is you need to get permission from every landowner on both sides of the stream. And so that makes it almost an exercise in like in futility for lots of streams, you know, where you have a lot of landowners. I tried to do a legal flow to the Upper Meritazine, which is a really beautiful stream that floats through the Chippewa Hills west of Ottawa, and I talk about it in my book. I think there were 33 landowners involved, and so I wrote to them, in certified mail, and they started writing me back, and they started. Some of them sent pictures of themselves. Some of them said, "I want to come with you." Some of them sent their own sort of logs of how much fun they'd had floating the stream and told me for certain, you know, landmarks to look for. But a couple of people I couldn't get a hold of. And this went on for weeks. And finally, you know, a guy said, you know, I don't think you should float by the river. And so my wife told me it was less a canoe trip than performance art, and or the most complicated canoe trip without the canoe trip ever mounted, and so you know, legally speaking, you know, I didn't do the float, and I suppose I could have asked him again or done something else or picked another part of the stream, but I did it to draw the point that it's a confusing sort of saying sometimes for somebody that's trying to get out and, you know, be on the river. And so I have a chapter in the book called The Renegade Streams of Eastern Kansas. Yeah. That, you know, I'm not trying to draw too much of a point, because the upside of there's a huge upside to river life in Kansas, and it's that we do have the Kansas River and the Arkansas River and the Missouri River, and you can go float on the Kaw. And through the efforts of Friends of the Kaw, who they've built, I think it's, you know, over a dozen river access points in the last 10 years. You can have a fantastic float along the Kaw. There won't be a lot of people out there. You can legally camp on the sandbars. You can wave at the bald eagles flying over. You can think about the 200-pound blue catfish that are there underneath your boat, for real.
Wow.
And, it's a great – and, I, you know, there are also a lot of canoe rental groups popping up in towns like Lecompton, Topeka, Manhattan. And if you go to the Friends of the Kaw website, kansasriver.org, you can you look for a list of all those organizations and put your float together. So I definitely suggest that anybody that wants to learn about the Kaw or go canoeing, go to kansasriver.org to learn more about that.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, at one point, that's why I didn't want to talk to you too much out in the green room before the show, because I'm like, did we talk about this already? But I don't think we made the point that you made clear in the book is that Kansas has the smallest percentage of public land of any state.
Right, and this was something that surprised me when I learned it. I think it surprises a lot of people in that 98% of our land is privately owned. So, you know, and there are a lot of – there's a culture of private land ownership in Kansas that goes back to statehood, and you know, it's got its own flavor in the western part of the state. It's a little different in the eastern part of the state. You can contrast it to Nevada that's 2% privately owned, 98% publicly owned. But the other thing is that we – until recently, we didn't really – create parks around the excellent wild places that remained. So a big chunk of that 2% of public land is public hunting areas, wild, quote unquote, wildlife refuges that were just sort of tacked onto the big federal reservoir projects. And so Now, I think that's changed in recent years. And, you know, Tallgrass Prairie National Preserve, you can't say enough good things about that. That was a park that was created through after, you know, dozens of years of controversial sort of political meanderings, was put together to preserve one of the largest available, you know, ranches of Tallgrass Prairie left in the world, the Z-Bar Ranch. So it is interesting, the private land ownership issue is interesting for sure.
It makes a big difference. I do want to make sure, this time's going so quickly, I do want to make sure we touch on something that we've covered on this program before, the wetlands. Are we calling it the Baker Wetlands, Haskell Wetlands?
Yeah, some people call it the Haskell-Baker Wetlands.
Yeah, right.
And, Baker University, they manage not only the Haskell-Baker Wetlands, but the Baldwin Woods, too.
Uh-huh.
And, people, it's been in the news a lot, you know.
Yeah, for 20 years.
For the road project, for many, many years.
Yeah.
And kind of my interest in the Haskell Baker Wetlands, other than the fact it's in my backyard because I live in Lawrence, was my daughter and I went out into the wetlands once after I had learned that river otters were coming back into the state. And for whatever reason, I just love otters. I just think they're awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we went out to the Baker Wetlands, and she noticed these tracks. She was little at the time. And we realized that these were otter tracks. And at the time, nobody thought that there were otters in Douglas County, the county that we lived at. Now, it wouldn't have been surprising that they're coming back, but it was right at the edge of when they're kind of making inroads back along the Kaw River. So we got permission from the wetlands manager, Roger Boyd, to put up night cams, and we checked them day after day, and finally took a picture of a northern river otter in the Baker Wetlands. At some level, that was like the first sort of documented, you know, photograph or physical evidence of an otter in our county since the 1800s. And The wetlands has engendered a lot of, you know, passionate sort of pleas to, quote-unquote, to preserve it, because they were building a road, the South Lawrence Trafficway.
Trafficway, right.
And so the road has been built through the northern part of the wetlands, and a lot of people thought it shouldn't be built there. The upside of that is that it's over to mitigate the road. The Federal Highway Department bought other existing historical wetlands that were then put together with the existing wetland that wasn't in the road project. And so the Baker Wetlands will continue to thrive. And so they built like a discovery center there, and they've built new wetlands. A wetland isn't exactly like a Tallgrass Prairie, because if you plow up a Tallgrass Prairie, it's basically gone forever.
Right, yeah.
People are definitely studying how do you create new prairies, and maybe, you know, through technology we'll learn how to do it. Wetlands seem to be a little more forgiving. And so the Haskell-Baker Wetlands, at one point, you know, it was like a farming sort of experiment for Haskell University. And so the remaining native grasses in the Baker Wetlands were largely not affected by the road project, at least a big parcel of them. So that's kind of the silver lining.
Yeah, well,
it's too bad to lose that.
The first time I went there, I was like, how could anyone think of touching this?
Yeah.
We try to look for the upside in things. And
I did try to take a positive tone in the book.
Yeah.
And it was, again, like the original title that I was sort of thinking about was Kansas, a Trespasser's Guide. Because when I first started, I sort of had my head around negative issues when I first went into this project. And it's because I was thinking about my experiences in the West.
Right.
And I had to let my eyes adjust a long time until I could see Kansas sort of with my prejudices stripped away.
Right, right.
And once my eyes adjusted, my view, you know, came around. And I think what people have noted about the book is it's, you know, it is a positive, hopeful sort of story. But it is, the title is The Last Wild right, Places right. of Kansas. And so, you know, there's no guarantee that the sites that do remain will always remain. And so, you know, I think it's important for people to learn about what we have here and to, you know, take a preservationist mentality towards them for sure.
Yeah, that's great. And then, so really quickly, what about the Baldwin Woods?
Yeah, the Baldwin Woods are another very little, I think a place not many people know about. They're in southern Douglas County near Baldwin City. Mm-hmm. North of Baldwin City, you can go and you can walk in the Bridenthal Forest, which feels like you're in like the Smoky Mountains.
Really?
You can go out there. If you go out there like at dusk, you might see the whole place glowing with green foxfire, which is a phosphorescent fungi.
Wow.
And it's just a bizarre and cool experience. And flying squirrels.
This is
north of Baldwin Woods. And
that's awesome.
And so that is cool. We also tried to find flying squirrels there a few times walking around at night, and that was more of a snipe hunt. if you want to impress your girlfriend, say you're going to go look for flying squirrels at night in the Baldwin Woods. But and then there's the Douglas County Lake is there too, and that's also sort of a – the woods around the Douglas County Lake are part of that complex. And some people have written that it's perhaps the westernmost part of the eastern deciduous forest that at one time, you know, sort of connected directly. You know, a squirrel could take off in the Atlantic Ocean and walk all the way to the Baldwin Woods.
That's incredible.
Let me be more specific. Walk in the trees all the way.
Right. Yeah.
You get one tired squirrel. Yeah.
Yeah, really. We've been talking to George Frazier, and he's the author of The Last Wild Places of Kansas, and I've got to tell you, I've really enjoyed this book, Journeys into Hidden Landscapes. And I did get a note that we did have a taker on the second book, so congratulations to Ganesh and thank you for your kind contribution. And you too can support Eco Radio KC and KKFI by making your call right now at 888-931-0901. At the $35 level, there we still have the solar CDs, and at the $50 level, we have one Missouri River Relief ball cap. And again, that number is 888-931-0901. And George, I can't thank you enough. Oh, what? Go ahead.
Okay, we mentioned too that you know the book is published by University Press of Kansas.
Okay,
and
great.
As part of their environmental history, you know, offerings, and they're trying to definitely get the word out about you know the wild places that are in Kansas through not only my book but others that are in that series, and it's available pretty much throughout the metro area. You can get it at Rainy Day Books. You can get it at all the Barnes and Nobles, and of course, you know, online.
Yeah. And someone told me they saw it in a window in a bookstore in Lawrence, too.
Lawrence, you can get it at the Raven.
Yeah, I think
that's it. And at bookstores all through Kansas, though. In Wichita, you can get it at Watermark Books and some of the, you know, the cool existing independent bookstores in Kansas, they all have it.
Yeah, that's great. So those bookstores, that they're not extinct yet, right?
Well, they're definitely one of the last.
Right.
Yeah, they're on the way out.
So I do see we have another caller on the air, but on the line. We've got a few more phone lines available at 888-931-0901. Naturally, has some calendar of events for us. What do we got going on?
Yeah, Mike, we got a few things happening actually right now and taking place until 8 p.m. tonight at the Southeast Community Center, which is located at 4201 East 63rd Street. They'll be discussing issues at the Bannister Complex. In attendance and participating will be Emmanuel Cleaver, who will have an aide present. Kansas City 5th District City Councilpersons Alicia Kennedy, Lee Barnes, and also Ann Solentrop of the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability. So that's going on until 8 p.m. tonight out at the Southeast Community Center. Also, Friends of the Caw are looking for some folks that are interested in volunteering for some of their paddle experiences that they are doing with the Boys and Girls Clubs all along the river, with groups coming from Manhattan all the way to Kansas City, Kansas. The events will be at Lake Shawnee in Topeka, Lake Lenexa, or Wyandotte County Lake, June 9th and June 16th. Someone interested in an educational opportunity to teach the kids a stormwater program at one of the stations, there's also an opportunity for that, and they will train you for that. So you can contact Riverkeeper by email which is riverkeeper at kansasriver.org, or you can call 785-312-7200, but just look up Friends of the Call on Facebook and you can find them. And also, it's not too late to sign up for the Mid-America Regional Council's Green Commute Challenge. Save money, take care of the air, and qualify for some great prizes when you bus, bike, walk, carpool, or take the streetcar to work. The challenge runs June 1st through August 31st, and teams can sign up now through July 8th. Go to rideshareKC.org to learn more and to sign up. And I also wanted to mention, Mike had mentioned John Garland Park over in Kansas City, Kansas. It's a park that is on top of a landfill over in Kansas City, Kansas. And HNMA, the Historic Northeast Midtown Association, is going to be having a meeting about that, if it's safe for the community, and just answering questions. So go to hnmanbr.org for more information.
All right. Thank you very much. And there is still a few minutes to call and show your support for Eco Radio KC. Skylar, what's that number once again?
That will be 888-931-0901.
All right. Thanks, Skylar. Thanks, George. Thank you, naturally. And thanks to all the folks that have called in. And 888-931-0901.
This is KKFI volunteer Phil Bauer. If you are tired of some radio stations only offering the same popular music over and over as if it is canned, KKFI is listening because we offer more than just pop in a can. KKFI plays unique music that you may not find anywhere else, and this includes local musical artists right from your community. So, if you'd like to savor your music from something more than a can, pledge at 888-931-0901 or go online at kkfi.org. Ensure something refreshing awaits when you pledge at 888-931-0901. KKFI is listening and waiting to quench your thirst for good music, so make your pledge at 888-931-0901.